Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm LeVar Evans. Stand by for news and comments. Of course, here on Blog Talk Radio, on the home of the News and Comment Network, you can listen to such shows as News and Comment, The 411 Lounge, Eye on Hollywood, and now you can also listen to The Cutting Room Floor, which is every Monday. Eye on Hollywood, of course, being on Friday. Our specials on News and Comment and The 411 Lounge. Topping our stories today from Cairo, Egypt. Top leadership brought Egypt's ruling party resigned on Saturday, including the president's son. But the regime appeared to be digging in its heels, calculating that it can ride out street demonstrations to keep President Hosni Mubarak in office. The ruling party leaders resigned, including the country's most powerful political figures and its most unpopular among many Egyptians. The move may have been aimed at convincing protesters in the streets that the regime is sincere in implementing democratic reforms they demand. But state TV, which is announcing the resignation, still identified head of state Mubarak as president of the ruling party and assigned he would remain in authority. Prime Minister Ahmed Sharif said Saturday that stability was returning to the country, appearing confident that a deal on future reforms can be reached with the multiple opposition movements to defuse protests without the 82-year-old Mubarak necessarily leaving power immediately. The protesters have refused to end their mass rallies in downtown Tahrir Square until he quits. Tens of thousands gathered Saturday in Tahrir, waving flags and chanting a day after some 100,000 massed there in an intensified demonstration labeled the Day of Departure, in hopes it would be the day that Mubarak leaves. Their unprecedented 12-day movement has entered a delicate new phase. Organizers fear that without the pressure of protesters on the street, Mubarak's regime will enact only cosmetic reforms to try to preserve its grip on power. So they are reluctant to lift their demonstrations without the concrete reign of Mubarak's ouster and a transition mechanism that guarantees a real move to democracy afterwards. Of course, Mubarak has insisted he will remain in his post until the end of his term in the fall. In the meantime, the government has sought to draw opposition parties and the youth groups involved in the protest into immediate negotiations on constitutional reforms so presidential elections could be held in September to replace it. Among those in the six-member party steering committee that stepped down, the National Democratic Party Secretary General Safwat El Sharif and the president's son, Gamal Mubarak, who was long seen as his father's intended heir as president. Turmoil has crushed those ambitions, however, with Vice President Omar Suleiman promising in the past week that Gamal will not, and I repeat, will not run for president in September. The new steering committee was named, headed by Hassan Bari, who replaced Gamal as head of a separate politics committee. Government military have promised not to try to clear protesters from the street, but soldiers guarding the square continue to let people enter to join the growing rally. But there are signs of tensions, as seen on Saturday there. At one point, army tanks tried to be brought out to try to bulldoze away several burned-out vehicles that protesters used in barricades during fighting this week with pro-regime attackers. Protesters say they want the gutted chassis in place in case of a new attack. Protesters climb into the vehicles and lay down in front of them to prevent soldiers from removing them, and only after heated arguments did troops agree. Also, there were reports for the first time of attempts by troops guarding the square's entrances to prevent those entering from bringing food for protesters, thousands of whom have camped out for days and need a constant flow of supplies. Egypt's top ally in the United States has pressed Mubarak, who have ruled for nearly three decades, with authoritarian hands to launch a democratic transition immediately and step aside quickly. The administration has held behind-the-scenes talks with Egyptian officials on a variety of ways to do that, including a proposal that Mubarak would step down now and hand the power to Suleiman. President Barack Obama stopped short of calling for Mubarak's immediate resignation, but said Friday that the Egyptian leader should think about his legacy and exit office in a way that ensures peace and democracy. He said the president, in quote, "My hope is that he will end up making the right decision." In Australia, torrential rains and flash floods trapped scores of people at homes and cars following a massive cyclone, piling more misery on Australia on Saturday after weeks of record inundations. Its coastal residents pieced together homes and farms destroyed by a severe tropical cyclone Yasi. Dramatic deluges brought by cyclone activity caused chaos in the state of Victoria, which is some 1,200 miles away. Authorities urged residents of the small town of Coowee Rup, which is southeast of Melbourne, to evacuate for fear of flash floods, while more than 80 people were rescued from flood-bound houses and vehicles. An English tourist was in critical condition with serious head injuries after a gum tree came down on her, and a 14-year-old girl was pulled from a swollen river. Emergency services fielded thousands of calls for help. And quoting Victoria State Premier Ted Ballew, he says, "There is a simple message for everybody in Victoria at the moment. Please take care. Whether you're near the roads, whether you're near floodwaters, please don't drive through, ride through, or play through." Parts of Melbourne, Australia's second biggest city, were lashed by about 6.8 inches of rain overnight, while flash floods hit the town of Maldura after a record downpour on Friday afternoon. The rain's come in the wake of Australia's worst cyclone in a century, which left a trail of destruction and a damage bill of billions of dollars in U.S. dollars after hitting Queensland State on Wednesday. But miraculously, there were no known deaths. In Houston, the astronaut husband of wounded Representative Gabrielle Giffords said that his wife would, quote, be very comfortable with his decision to go back into space. He expects her to be at his launch in April. Space Shuttle Commander Mark Kelly wouldn't go into details about her condition during a news conference yesterday and deflected questions about how he knows she supports his choice to fly. He says, in quote, "I know her very well, and she would be very comfortable with the decision that I've made." Kelly, of course, took a leave from training after Giffords was gunned in Tucson, Arizona on January 8th. NASA announced earlier Friday he would resume training for Space Shuttle Endeavour's two-week mission, which is targeted for liftoff from Cape Canaveral on April 19th. When asked if Giffords might be well enough to attend its launch, Kelly said, quote, "Absolutely. I have every intention she'll be there for the launch. I've already talked to her doctors about it." It will be Endeavour's final flight for the space flight, Kelly. Speaking of, attempted Tucson shooter Jarrett Lounger will face several more charges after he's tried in federal court for the attempted assassination and attempted murder of two of her aides. 22-year-old college dropout is accused of opening fire on a crowd of bystanders outside of her event on January 8th, which killed six people and wounded 13. If you recall, on January 24th, he pleaded not guilty to federal charges. And there will be more, of course, in the coming weeks on that. While digging out, of course, of the weather that affected the 30 states this week in Chicago, the mayoral race is heating up as the lead frontrunner and challenger Rahm Emanuel has picked up another endorsement, this time from the Chicago Tribune, that gives him the clean sweep of both of Chicago's major papers, the Chicago Sun-Times, also endorsing him this week. Latest polls show that he is still in the lead, leading challenger Gary Chico and former United States Senator Carol Holzen Braun, who was in third. In a moment, we'll have a look at business news. Of course, we said here on the News and Comment Network, you can listen to The Cutting Room Floor, our brand new show, about news and stories that don't make the regular shows and end up on the back pages. That show is on Mondays. You can always check our News and Comment website for more details. In business news, Verizon Wireless on Friday said its first day of taking online orders for the iPhone produced record sales, and it stopped taking orders until Wednesday. The cell phone carrier said that just 2 hours on Thursday morning between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., more customers had ordered the phone than in the full day of any previous phone launch. The company didn't specify how many iPhones had been ordered. It halted orders at 8:10 p.m. on Thursday and said it will resume taking orders at 3 a.m. on Wednesday. It's only taking orders from current Verizon subscribers. The phone will be available in stores for the general public next Thursday, but suppliers are likely to be tight. AT&T Inc. has so far been the exclusive carrier of Apple Inc.'s popular phone in the U.S. It activated 15.2 million of them last year. Analyst estimates for Verizon iPhone sales this year vary widely from 5 million to 13 million. Analysts expect the sales to Verizon subscribers will be strong. The big question is how many iPhone buyers will be jumping ship from other carriers. Verizon is offering trade-in rebates for new customers, which can help offset the cost of breaking a contract with AT&T. For example, it's offering $212 for a 16-gigabyte iPhone 4 in good condition. AT&T's fee for breaking an iPhone 4 contract early is $325, but that's prorated by $10 a month. On Thursday, Verizon revealed that it will slow down traffic for heavy data users on limited plans if they're hogging the local cell tower. This, of course, only applies to subscribers signing up for a new data plan or renewing the contract. And since the unlimited data plan is required for the iPhone, Verizon is reserving the right to throttle all iPhone traffic. It also said it will conserve data capacity by recording all online video requested by data subscribers, except the effect on image quality should be minimal. News from Washington and Reuters, unemployment rose by a meager 36,000 jobs in January, far less than expected, as severe snowstorms slammed large parts of the nation. Of course, I don't have to tell you that if you're digging out of the snow. The unemployment rate fell to its lowest level since April of 2009. Despite the conflicting signals in the Labor Department's report on Friday, economists were agreed that the job market recovery was proceeding apace, if not gaining speed. Many investors also saw the data as a sign of strength. Government bonds sold off while the dollar rallied against the yen and the euro. The payrolls gain reported by U.S. employers was a quarter of the 145,000 gain economists had expected, but a separate household survey, which is used to determine the jobless rate, showed nearly 600,000 more people reported they were employed. That surge pushed the unemployment rate to 9% from 9.4% in December. It's dropped 0.8% since November, the biggest two-month decline since 1958. Still, a decline in the jobless rate is unlikely to discourage the Federal Reserve from completing its $600 billion government bond buying program to support the economy. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke on Thursday sounded a little bit more upbeat in the economy, saying, quote, it will be several years before the employment rate has returned to a normal level. Economists estimated that blizzards which pounded the Northeast in January in various cities in knee-deep snow reduced payrolls by between 50,000 and 100,000. Signs of underlying strength in the labor market also yielded by revisions to November and December payrolls, which showed 40,000 more jobs created than previously estimated. The U.S. Treasury debt sell-off pushed the spread between 2-year yields and 10-year yields to an 11-month high. Stocks on Wall Street a little changed by mid-afternoon when the report has come out. In Paris, luxury retailer LVMH said on Friday that strong demand for its champagnes and Louis Vuitton leather bags helped it make a 73% leap in full-year profit and said prospects for 2011 were good. CEO Bernard Arnault, in a statement on the firm's annual earnings, said that, quote, 2010 was a great vintage for LVMH. Annual net profits rose to $4.13 billion. From last year, when many affluent customers were spooked by the financial crisis. LVMH, of course, which owns the Fendi fashion house and the Tag Heuer watch brand, posted a 19% rise in revenue, 20.32 billion euros, or the U.S. dollar, 17.5 billion a year ago, matching analyst expectations. Revenue in the fourth quarter, the industry's most important period of the year, rose 20%, further reflecting strong demand for luxury goods over the holiday period. Sales in its fashion and leather goods division, which is home to Louis Vuitton, rose 20% to $2.12 billion in the fourth quarter. Also in business news, the S&P 500 posted its best week in 9 on Friday. As the market defied calls for a pullback, investors rotated into defensive and lagging sectors in a move that could intensify in coming weeks. Signs of improvement in the economy and strong corporate earnings have propelled stock prices, with tapering volume, meager gains, and declining numbers of advances stocks pointed to warning buying interest at the end of the week. January's employment data had a limited impact as job creation was weak, but the unemployment rate fell, leaving many investors unsure how to interpret the report. If you're looking back at the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week, it rose 29.89 points or 25% at 12,092.15. The Standard Poor's 500 Index added 3.77 points on Friday. And for the week, the Dow rose 2.3%, the S&P rose 2.7%, and the NASDAQ gained 3.1%. In a moment, a study on what Americans own more in this technology world. Just a reminder, you can catch Eye on Hollywood at our official Twitter site at www.twitter.com/4, Eye on Hollywood. In our tech health news, Mobile phones are the most popular gadget among adult Americans, followed by computers, digital music players, game consoles, and electronic book readers, according to a new survey. A survey by the Pew Research Center's Internet and American Life Project found that 85% of Americans 18 and older own a cell phone, and 90% of all adults living in a household with at least one cell phone. 59% of American adults own a desktop computer, 52% own a laptop computer, and 4% on a tablet like Apple's iPad. Pew said the study, quote, generations and their gadgets definitely changed. 47% own an iPod or another MP3 digital music player, and 42% own a game console. 5% own an e-book reader like Amazon's Kindle. Only 9% of those surveyed do not own any of the devices altogether, although the percentage of gadget less rises to 20% among Americans aged 66 to 74, and 43% among those 75 and older. Americans between 18 and 34 were more likely to own a laptop computer at 70% than a desktop computer at 57%. Only 28% of Americans 75 and older own desktops, and only 10% own laptops. Digital music players are the most popular among the 18 to 34 crowd, with 74% of so-called millennials owning one, and the percentage decreasing steadily by age. Game consoles are equally popular among adults aged 18 to 34 and those 35 to 46, with 63% of both age groups owning their devices, and the number falling to 38% among those between the ages of 47 to 56. In health news, about 340,000 cancer cases in the United States could be prevented each year if Americans ate a healthy diet, got regular exercise, and limited their alcohol intake, according to the World Cancer Research Fund. These types of lifestyle changes could lead to significant reductions in particularly common cancers such as breast cancer, 38% fewer cases per year, stomach cancer, 47% fewer, and colon cancer, 45% fewer. The research about how a healthy lifestyle can reduce cancer risk was released yesterday to mark World Cancer Day. The WCRF said its findings are supported by the World Health Organization's new global recommendations on physical activity for health, a report that says that regular physical activity can prevent many diseases. Of course, cancer is the leading cause of death worldwide. Each year, 12.7 million people are diagnosed with cancer, and 7.6 million die from the disease. 30% to 40% of cancers can be prevented, and one-third can be cured through early diagnosis and treatment. In sports, all eyes in the world are on Dallas. A rare snowstorm deep in the heart of Texas, though, has added another unusual twist to Sunday's Super Bowl between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Green Bay Packers. The game was already looming in the classic battle between two of the NFL's most successful and popular franchises, but the big freeze that has paralyzed large parts of the United States has added a surreal touch to the occasion. Even the host city of Dallas was immune. Been transformed into an unlikely winter wonderland as the teams put the finishing touches to their preparations for the biggest annual sporting event in North America. But while a blizzard this week forced airport closures and wreaked havoc on travel plans for anxious fans trying to get to North Texas ahead of Sunday's game, it's failed to dampen the hype and excitement about one of the most eagerly awaited Super Bowls in years. More than 100,000 people will be expected to cram into the Space Age Cowboys Stadium to watch the game live, while an estimated worldwide audience of more than 160 million are expected to watch on television. Of course, this is the first time that the teams have met in the playoffs. The Packers have not beaten the Steelers in the regular season since 1995, although they have played each other three times since then. At their last meeting in 2009, the Steelers won that game 37-36 when Pittsburgh quarterback Ben Roethlisberger threw a touchdown on the final play. Steelers and Packers boast the two best defenses in the NFL this season, but as always, the battle between the two quarterbacks is looming as one of the keys to the outcome. All eyes actually are also there in Dallas today, as the finalists for this year's Pro Football Hall of Fame will be announced in a primetime airing on the NFL Network. Among some of the favorites expected to make the final cut are running back Marshall Faulk, running back Jerome Bettis, quarterback Deion Sanders, tight end Shannon Sharp, and possibly offensive lineman Willie Grove. A few other players are also on that list, including former Super Bowl MVP Richard Dent, NFL Films founder Ed Sable, and two Veterans Committee nominees of Les Richter and Chris Hamburger. In entertainment news, of course, The King's Speech has been garnering a lot of awards this season. So what does Queen Elizabeth think of The King's Speech? She actually gives it two royal thumbs up. Queen Elizabeth, depicted as the young daughter of King George VI, which is played by Colin Firth in the Oscar-nominated film The King's Speech, received a screening about her father's struggle with public speaking and his eventual triumph and inspiration in inspiring the nation in facing the German invasion. According to producers of the Weinstein Company, she was, quote, moved by the movie. The film was made only following the death of her mother, Queen Mum, who was played by Helena Bonham Carter in the film. She asked writer David Seidel to refrain from committing to the screenplay and to the film until her passing, because it was too painful for her to watch. Of course, if you're tracking it, Colin Firth has won all the major film awards so far, including the Golden Globe and the SAG Award. And the film, of course, is nominated for 12 Oscars. It's considered by some to be a favorite after a number of the old ones over the social network. Long overdue Grammy performance set to take place next Sunday. It's Mick Jagger, singer of the legendary rock group The Rolling Stones, is set to perform live at the Grammy Awards for the first time ever. The 2011 ceremony will take place on Sunday, February 13th, and air live on CBS at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Mick Jagger, who's a Grammy winner herself, is scheduled to perform as part of an annual In Memoriam Tributes, which pays tribute to musicians and other famous music personalities who died the last year. He will be accompanied by Raphael Sadiq and his band. Taking a look at a couple of stories off of the press wires from New York and from Reuters, American researchers have found a new way to predict the success of a relationship, comparing the speaking style of the couple. In a study of college students, they found that couples whose language is in sync were almost four times more likely to want to see each other again than those who did not use similar language. Quoting Professor James Pennebaker of the University of Texas embedded the research team, he says, and quote, "We are able to predict this at higher rates than the people themselves." The researchers, who reported their findings in the journal Psychological Science, focused on functional words, which are not nouns or verbs, but the words that show how these words relate. For example, A, B, and then B-E, anything, that, will, and him. Function words are highly social, and they require social skills to use, Pennebaker explained. For example, if I'm talking about the article that's coming out in a few minutes, I make some reference to the article. You and I both know what that article means. As part of the experiment, about 40 pairs of college students participated in 4-minute speed dates to have their conversations recorded. He said that they found that function words are a powerful reflection of somebody's psychological state. A second part of the study examined that everyday instant message conversations between already dating couples over a 10-day period. Conversations were analyzed by a computer for words and conversational patterns. It sounds to me, normal conversating and staying clear and being concise seems to be the key word in the bear. And finally, from Berlin, comes news about two robbers who are on the run with over what is $16,000 worth of rose-scented stamps stolen from a stationery store in northern Germany after their demand for cash was unsuccessful. The two men entered the stationery store on the main street in the village of Barbusel, armed with pistols, and demanded money from the store's 40-year-old owner. But when the owner opened the store safe, the thousands of aromatic stamps were the only contents worth taking. The stamps had a rose motif and an individual value of 55 cents, which is enough to know a letter within Germany. Quote, "Stamps like this can easily be sold for prices lower than their face value," adding that stolen stamps often appear on online marketplaces like eBay. They can also send a lot of love letters. And I guess in this case, it's probably the first known time that robbers come out smelling like a rose. That's news and comment. I'm LeVar Evans. Have a great day. And thanks for listening.